Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. Today we're going to talk about Democrats. What's going through their heads? What they hope to achieve after Kamala's humiliating loss, and why they're pointing fingers at the GOP for things they should be taking responsibility for. Let's kick things off with a look at someone they consider their rising star, Gavin Newsom, the governor of failing California. KCBS Radio in the Bay Area lets us in on what the silver-haired fox hopes to do next.
Because South Carolina is an awful long way to go to not run for president. And we're joined here in the studio by KCBS insider Phil Mateer and former Mayor Willie Brown. So, gentlemen, he won't commit to it yet, but why go to South Carolina?
Well, obviously, he has some place to go where he's going to be accepted. He has trouble out here.
Well, Mayor's got a really good point. The governor does have trouble out here. When he shows up here, people ask him about the gas prices, about the utilities, about home insurance, about fire safety, about the homeless.
And about eggs.
Yes.
About eggs. You go to South Carolina, you get to talk about national things, which is much more comfortable for politicians. They used to be, you know, you'd go on sister city trips. He doesn't have sister cities, so he goes on sister states.
He's doing a good job,
but what's
frankly.
What's the message that he's trying to send out there?
Well, there's nobody else, no competition at the moment, because Kamala still hasn't made up her mind on the governorship, so she can't be worrying about the presidency now or performing in that category. And then there's just nobody else. You know, you look all over the country, guy in Illinois is whatever.
Pritzker.
Yes, whatever. The guy in Pennsylvania,
Shapiro,
is whatever. Yes, right. It's amazing how many people you would think would already be in place. And, you know, the guy in Arizona is looking to fly again.
Oh, the senator?
Yes.
You know, it's
Kelly.
It's one of those things, it's not a question of if he's running or not. He is. I mean, and he has been for years. He has the operation. He is, you know, taking a page from Trump's playbook, Hillary Clinton's. You never stop running. You always are just a presence. He's just, every week he's trying to be a national presence.
But he has to, frankly, go to new territory every week, because believe me, there's nothing worse than a born repeater.
He is in red rural areas. I mean, is this genuinely about expanding Democratic influence in red states? It seems like this is the torch that he's carrying, or is he really laying the groundwork? Or maybe it's both.
No. He really is trying to lay the groundwork, because he has no idea, frankly, and no one, anybody else, know who they're talking to.
The mayor's right. His people have made a point. They see we've seen Gavin to the left. We've seen progressive Gavin. Okay. Now we're seeing the middle of the road. Why? Because that's where they map it. They looked at the numbers and they say, The path forward is in the middle, not on the left. You'll get to 20 on the left, but you got to go the middle. The question I have for Mayor Brown is, you know, is he running for president or is he running for the Democratic nomination?
He's running first for the Democratic nomination. He has no idea who's going to be his opponent. He has no idea if there's really going to be a presidential race. After all, who is going to tell Trump it's over?
Didn't work last time.
Nope, it sure didn't. Okay, that's KCBS insider Phil Mateer and former San Francisco Mayor Willie Brown.
Let's move on to talking about other Democrats, namely the guy running for mayor of New York. WORD Radio's Tara Servatius has some thoughts about it.
Communism is cool, after all. Yeah, it's a little communism here, a little communism there. It's a future. And look. As Mancommy has explained, Moron Mancommy, who is running to be the mayor of New York, violence, if Democrats are committing it, is not violence. No, violence is when prosecutors prosecute criminals who commit violence. Oh, and we are going to go ahead and confiscate and centralize means of production. We're going to do that. We're going to make the case for that. We're going to take the property of landlords in New York and, you know, just give it to the homeless. Oh, and if I catch Netanyahu or any high-ranking Israeli officials setting foot in New York, which, you know, they have the big UN confab there every year. I'm just going to capture them and turn them over for prosecution to the International Criminal Court. Now, how he's going to do that, since he has vowed to abolish the police, I am not sure. I'm not sure who is going to capture Netanyahu and other members of the Israeli cabinet. But somebody's going to do it. Maybe he go do it himself, make a citizen's arrest. Folks, this is not just a guy who says, hey, we should defund the police department. This is way beyond it. Abolish the police. Abolish prisons. He is a total Marxist. But, you know, the Democrat Party is a big tent. And we can accommodate all voices, including those who retweet caricature-like anti-Semitic cartoons, which he did, mocking Jews. His the branch of the organization that he started in college advocated for suicide bombing. It should be a lot easier if there's no police. But, you know, there's space for all kinds of anti-Semites in the Democrat Party. It's big tent, says the head of the party, DNC chair Ken Martin. Listen to this. And particularly think about this. This would have been unthinkable, unsayable political suicide back even during the Cold War. When if you were an active member of the Chinese Communist Party trying to operate on our soil, the Russian Communist Party, or just the Communist Party, period, you were spied upon and surveilled as an enemy by our intel agencies. But today, it's just big tent, y'all.
What about concerns from some of your Jewish colleagues in particular about him not outright
condemning the phrase? And let me set this up for a sec. This is the head of the party, DNC chair Ken Martin. What about the anti-Semitism? What about his mother, who's a director in Hollywood, trying to get an actor banned what was the award ceremony? I forget. I have to look it up because she was Jewish. I mean, just open, overt hatred. What about that, Ken?
What about concerns from some of your Jewish colleagues in particular about him not outright condemning the phrase globalize the intifada in a recent interview? Some of your Jewish colleagues have said that that could be very disturbing, potentially dangerous. Do you agree with that?
You know, there's no candidate in this party that I agree 100% of the time with, to be honest with you. There's things that I don't agree with Mamdani that he said. But at the end of the day, I always believe, as a Democratic Party chair in Minnesota for the last 14 years and now the chair of the DNC, that you win through addition. You win by bringing people into your coalition. We have conservative Democrats. We have centrist Democrats. We have labor progressives like me. And we have this new brand of Democrat, which is the leftist. And we win by bringing people into that coalition. And at the end of the day, for me, that's the type of party we're going to lead. We are a big tent party. Yes, it leads to dissent and debate, and there's differences of opinions on a whole host of issues. But we should celebrate that as a party and recognize at the end of the day, we're better because of it.
So we're going to show our tolerance by accepting the hate, the advocacy for terrorists and terrorism, Jew-hating communist. It'll show we're a tolerant party. We will include everybody except Republicans and people who identify as American or love America. But I mean, everybody else is cool. The more you hate America, the more we love you. That's where we are. Party of Jew hatred right there, which is incredible when you think about it. I mean, imagine if the RNC chief responded to a Nick Fuentes bid for office by saying, well, you know, we're a big tent. He doesn't like Jews. Oh, it would never end. He's a racist. But we're, you know, we're a big tent. It's very, very large. I mean, the tent is so large.
Okay.
This is where they're going. Folks, I can't get over this. Just the week that we've had. I mean, we start the week with folks. So far, this is the article of the year. I don't know what'll happen the rest of this year. This is the article of the year. Been talking about it all week from Axios. Democrats told, the headline, Democrats told to get shot for the anti-Trump resistance, told there needs to be blood to grab the attention of the press and the public. And by the end of the week, we've had three shooting attempts by liberals or illegal immigrants or both, the same thing, against ICE and Customs and Border Patrol agents. Democrats called for it. They got it. Are we going to have three attempted assassinations of federal agents every week now? Is this is it? This is new. This is the norm. This is where we're, and that's when they're not running Marxist communist candidates who hate Jews. This is really where we're, folks, where are we going to be by Christmas? Folks, I want to tie together this whole assassination situation with Donald Trump, everything that's breaking from the Secret Service. When you put it on the timeline, it starts to look very different. This is a big story. This is an outrageous story. It's a story everybody needs to pay attention to, especially Donald Trump, before it is too late. Because what's coming out is unbelievable. Okay, so what happens this week? Let's set it up. You cannot do the Secret Service story of agents getting a slap on the wrist. 42 days max suspension. They get to come back. No one's going to be fired, says the number two in charge, who really is the number two of the Secret Service. Okay, yeah, all right. But what about the timing of that announcement? It's you're going to be able to see the full gosh awfulness of it in a sec. What happened first? Iran levels its third and fourth assassination threats on Trump. One of them is a fatwa, which is a religious statement saying it is the moral duty of any Muslim anywhere who can get to Trump to kill him. That's what a fatwa is. It is morally incumbent upon you. If you can and you refuse, you have committed a sin against Allah. That's what that is. It's a death sentence. On the other hand, Iran is bragging, hey, we can get you anywhere with a drone. And the Secret Service chooses this week to announce, oh, yeah, no, the people in charge last time, they're still in charge. Nah, it's all good. It's all good. What is it? Folks, this is a dinner bell. Come and get him. And they're mocking us. They're mocking us. Biden left these people in place, the Biden regime, for a reason. And we're going to find out in a minute. I'm going to have this because this is incredible what Real Clear Investigations has broken overnight. That the people who were most directly in charge, the supervisors, were not among the six punished. They were promoted. That comes out at the same time. Do you think that's an accident? Right after Iran's like, yo, we're killing the guy. What else happened this week? Wall Street Journal, investigative journalist, Josh Dazi, comes out with his book. He says Iranian kill teams were on the ground. His whole book is about the Trump assassination, that period, Butler and after. Iranian kill teams were on the ground. They are likely still hunting him. And the reason that Donald Trump had to use decoy planes is because they snuck a missile across our border. Well, that sure tracks with what they're saying about the drone. That's exactly what Iran's been doing. They've been sending high-tech drones to the Houthis. The Houthis have been mounting missiles on them, and yeah. Here's a little bit of Dazi.
Elevated level of protection around him, even compared to other presidents. But I will say on the campaign trail, what we found was they had kill teams in the United States. The intelligence folks were telling them, folks in the United States who wanted to kill him.
That tracks exactly with the Sean Ryan podcast. He had a Defense Intelligence Agency agent on. Same thing.
But we had two solid sources, one south of the border and then one from an element within our own government that confirmed independently of each other that Iranian-made man pads, so surface-to-air missiles, had come across the border. We had the location and everything else. Well, we got this to Secret Service. We did the whole gamut and got everything pushed to them. And that's why Trump was pushing a lot of this stuff out when he was, because we had told the Secret Service and they had the reporting and everything else. We have not, to my knowledge, have not recovered those man pads. But what I do know we have done is we have apprehended the couriers on a second run of theirs, and local law enforcement got together with federal law enforcement and rolled up the safe house. And we have since identified what that issue was on the border.
So we now have Iranian missiles, who knows how many, and inside the United States.
You bet we do. They know all this. They've known all this. This is like waving a red cape in front of the bull. Come get him. Come get him. Come get him. Then this comes out. This week, look at the time. But this is not an accident. Especially not when you have the number two in charge of the Secret Service, who should have been fired yesterday. Matt Quinn, Quote, we are not going to fire our way out of this. We're going to focus on the root cause and fix the deficiencies that put us in that situation. He's laughing at us. He's laughing at Trump. And he's telegraphing to Iran. Because you know what else came out? Oh, it gets better. You know the six who were punished? I use that word lightly, punished. You know the six who were punished? They weren't even the ones responsible. They certainly played a part in it and were there. But Real Clear Politics reports that the key supervisors who signed off on the Butler security plan, the key supervisors who signed off on the Butler security plan, and two who were on the final walkthroughs were never disciplined, but instead got, what do you think? Big promotions. That comes out this week, right? After the Iranian assassination threats. Come and get them. That's what they're saying. It's a wonder Trump's still alive, honestly. I wouldn't leave the White House if I was him. Not till I got this straightened out. One of the supervisors on the final walkthrough, Nick Menster, was assigned this year as the number two in charge of Lara and Eric Trump's protective detail. Oh, great. They'd love to keep her from becoming a senator in North Carolina. The other one, Nick Olszewski, became the chief special agent in charge of the inspection division. He now heads the division. He was working in when he did the Butler rally inspection and supervised it. No punishment. The inspection division is responsible for ensuring the integrity of operations. Fantastic. Trump ain't gonna make it till Christmas, folks. And the integrity of the agency's personnel. So who got punished? Oh, you're going to love this. Wait till you hear this. And wait till you hear what else Iran is doing right now. Folks, I got to tell you, we got to wipe out the Secret Service. And then you know what we need to do next? I don't care who does it, us or Israel, we got to kill the mullahs, all of them. We got to wipe out the theocracy. We are running out of time. So if you craft the conditions for Donald Trump to get shot, you get promoted. Not disciplined, promoted within the Secret Service. They're still there. The supervisors in charge are not only there, they all got promotions. So who just got disciplined? Well, Real Clear Politics and Real Clear Investigations, part of the Real Clear Politics family of websites, reports that inexperienced agents positioned for failure and a senior agent who turned whistleblower and spoke out about the AGR roof coverage, there wasn't any, they took the best vantage point for assassination and drew it out of the security plan. I've always thought on purpose. This was all on purpose. Remember that Trump's regular crew was sidelined for this and inexperienced agents were brought in? That's who got punished. Them and a guy who turned whistleblower. Went to Congress. He got punished. The supervisors got promoted. One of them is now responsible for ensuring the integrity of operations to protect Trump. No punishment. And then what they're doing is they're letting the Iranians know. Hey, come and get him. He's wide open. I hope somebody puts this article in Trump's hands. I hope he understands what has happened here. Because this is a disaster. Rank and file agents are incensed over the decision not to hold the supervisors accountable, further sinking the low morale and exacerbating, retention problems throughout the agency. They're just fleeing. They're going, wow, people who let him get shot are being rewarded. Those who tried to change the culture, tried to save him, are getting punished. And they let all this information out this week, right on the tail end of the Iranian assassination threats. They're just letting Iran know, come on, come get him again. We got you back. We'll insecure and unsecure the rally. No big deal. God, I hope he doesn't do a rally. Now, let me back out to the big picture of this so you understand what's going on here. You know, I've been talking about Iran and the Democrat Party merging. This is why, after Iran tried to kill Trump twice, we have their assassin teams in prison awaiting trial in 21 and 23. There were never any sanctions lobbied against Iran. None. Whatsoever. No problems. Why? Because the Democrats were cool. They were on board. Iran and the Democrats so tied at the hip that, remember, John Kirby admitted, spokesperson for Joe Biden, oh yeah, Iran is funding our street marches. Oh, which ones? Parades? No, the anti-Semitic riots. We're marching together, and they fund it. Well, you think it's just here? It's worse. In Spain, the leader of the populist Trump knockoff right-wing party just narrowly escaped assassination. Guess who did it? Iranian kill team. Iranian kill team. Why? Because he was working with Iranian opposition groups. So, folks, you know what this is? The globalists and the Iranian assassination teams are working together, not just here, but throughout Europe. So I wonder, Tucker Carlson is like cool with this, and he's just all good. We'll just, you know, future Republican candidates will campaign from their bunkers where they hide because they don't want to die. Is that the plan? Or are we going to take out the Iranian leadership? Because, folks, we can't have Democrats in power with this going on. Because we literally physically won't survive. And if it's Trump survives, they'll go for Vance. They'll go for Rubio. They'll go for whoever runs for president. This is not a plan for the future, folks. This is war. We need to fight these people. We need to clear out the Secret Service now.
While Tara is worried about possible violence perpetrated by the Democrats, Mark Cox wants to discuss the assassination attempt narrowly survived by President Donald Trump 1 year ago. Here's more from his show in St. Louis.
A journalist who was there at the shooting and got a chance to talk to the president that very day because she was scheduled to have an interview for him. She's now written a book about that interaction, but I'm anxious to hear what Tanya's saying about these Secret Service agents, what they've learned, if anything, since this happened, and what changes they're talking about.
If you could sit down with the Secret Service, what would you tell them?
Why Butler? Why Butler? Why was that such a failure?
Yeah, it makes you wonder. That's the wife of the gentleman who was killed at that Butler rally, the firefighter. She's still got questions, and I don't blame her. So does the president.
Know exactly what was going on. I got whacked. There's no question about that. And fortunately got down quickly.
Yep. That was the president reflecting yesterday, did an interview yesterday with, of course, everybody wants to know his thoughts on what happened 1 year ago this Sunday. And we're gonna talk a little bit more about that with Tanya J. Powers. You know, I was listening to an interview yesterday with his chief of staff, and she was pointing out that the president said to that journalist who wrote the book that he felt the hand of God in what happened that day. And he felt it because of the fact that he just turned his head at that particular second and got grazed by that bullet instead of it taking the back of his head off. And then I listened to an interview with Susie Wiles, his chief of staff, who said that they had a script for these political events. There were a series of graphics that the president would call for during his speech. And as he's prone to do, that particular day in Butler, he went off script. And there was the graphic on immigration would normally have come up as the sixth or seventh slide in his speech he had scripted out, and it would have been on the monitor to his left. Instead, for whatever reason, he called for his technical people to put that graphic up on the screen to his right, and then he turned to look at it. He pointed to that screen, and then he turned to look at it, or indicated that's where he wanted it put up. And he lifted his head, and he looked up like that, which she pointed out was completely unexpected by everyone, particularly the technical crew, because it was planned to be on the monitor to his left. And had he been looking to his left, the back of his head is blown off. If he'd been looking straight ahead, the back of his head is blown off. Instead, in that second, he looks to the right and a bullet whizzes past his ear and bloodies him and, of course, ends up killing people. This was the president's comments on this yesterday.
Well, it was unforgettable. I didn't know exactly what was going on. I got whacked. There's no question about that. And fortunately got down quickly. You know, people were screaming, and I got down quickly, fortunately, because I think they shot 8 bullets. And one got me, and one got another one, and one got another one, and one killed Corey, the firefighter, great guy. And, you know, we had a tremendous, massive crowd. Tens of thousands of people were there. And our sniper, within less than 5 seconds, was able to get him from a long distance with one shot. If he didn't do that, you would have had an even worse situation.
Yeah, that's a good point. What have they discovered about that?
The way the rally itself unfolded, the chart he had them put up on the screens, on the big LED boards, it was always the last chart in the rotation. And it was always on the other side. So to have him ask for that chart 8 minutes in and to have it come on the side that is opposite caused him to look in a different direction and lift his head just a little because it was higher. And that just doesn't happen because it happened.
Yes.
It happened because I believe God wanted him to live.
Yeah. How about that? That is, of course, that's, of course, Susie Wiles, who's the chief of staff now for the president, who runs a pretty tight ship. I'll just have to tell you that. I like her a lot. I think if you've noticed a difference in this administration this time around, in terms of consistency and the way things are done and the way information is controlled is probably not the best way to put it, but there's a process in place. I think the gatekeeper is Susie Wiles. I point that out. So when I heard her talking about the anniversary of the shooting and just when the president talks about the hand of God, something took place that day out of the ordinary for the president to have turned his head at that point and not been killed. And I think she's right, and I think he's right to believe that, because that is, from how far out was that guy? 150 yards. That's an easy shot with any sort of semi-automatic sporting rifle, with a bolt-action sporting rifle. That's an easy shot. So now there are all these questions remain. How in the world did that guy get on that roof, this Thomas Crooks, his 20-year-old, and fire multiple shots without the Secret Service stopping him? And we've got Tanya on the phone right now. She's been covering this one-year anniversary coming up on Sunday. Tanya, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good to have you on today. So first of all, in terms of the Secret Service agents, I guess they're all agents, or maybe they were supervisors who've been either suspended or punished for this. What do we know about that?
Well, we know that one of them, I believe only one, excuse me, because there's a lot of drilling going on in the studio. I would love to be kidding, but I'm not. hang on, I'm going to change studios because
okay,
I can't even hear you.
Okay, that's okay.
So, yeah, one of the president's, well, then candidate Trump's personal detail was actually suspended. He was a junior member of the detail, but still a Secret Service agent. And that one is the one that got the longest suspension, that 42 days. And by the way, these suspensions ranged in days from, I think, 10 to 42. And there are some after they were announced this week. I mean, because it's been, you know, a year.
Right.
People had wondered, okay, what's going on with the Secret Service stuff? Because, of course, you know, the head of the agency stepped down 10 days after the attack. There were the hearings. There have been investigations. A lot of questions about what was done as far as the, you know, response of the agents. These 6 agents were given anywhere from 10 to 42 days. And we've learned also that one of the lawyers for one of the agents says, well, this is not even as much as the Secret Service initially wanted to give them as far as a suspension. They wanted them to be tougher. And apparently the lawyers, you know, negotiated down the time or the, you know, parameters of the suspension. Let me put it that way. So this was actually that it doesn't may not sound like much, you know, 10 to 42 days is suspended without pay after, you know, that happened. But that's one of the reasons the suspensions went longer. And when they were announced this week, there were a lot of folks, especially former agents, who were like, wow, this doesn't seem nearly as, you know, strict or tough as it probably should have been. So there's still, you know, back and forth over that. There's back and forth of kind of finger pointing, as there has been for quite a while, over the role of, okay, well, was this the fault? You know, did the fault lie with the agents in the Pittsburgh office, the, you know, field office, or, you know, the senior agents on the personal detail? That is, you know, these are all questions that have been, you know, kind of back and forth of one side says, well, it should have, they should have done more. They knew the area better versus, okay, well, you guys were the pros with the, you know, president slash, you know, then candidate. You guys should have done a better job. It's back and forth.
Yeah, you would have thought with the Trump people coming in that maybe because other agencies have experienced a little bit of the cleaning house, they might have done that there. Are they satisfied that they fixed problems? Has anybody commented on that?
One of the interesting pieces of all of this is the fact that the person who is the agency director now was the lead agent on his personal security detail, and one of the guys who basically lunged to his side after the shots were fired. That's the guy that Trump put in charge of the agency in January. Curran is his name. He's the guy who was the lead agent at the time on site. So it does, you know, there are people who have questioned, okay, well, what about the, you know, what about the leadership? You know, who's in charge? Is there, you know, is this going to be fixed? Is what's being done, what's being put in place to make sure that, you know, something like this isn't, there isn't a failure of this, you know, magnitude again.
Wow.
Red meat friends, this has been a serious episode as always. The weekend is about to start, and call me crazy, but I feel like we need a little levity. So without further ado, here it is.
This is just so weird. There's a Pittsburgh group that has announced the return of what they call, and I quote, Balls Out Bowling. It's a nude annual bowling event where clothing is not allowed. It's taking place on Saturday. You pay $30, you get 4 hours of unlimited bowling. You do have to rent shoes, so those are required. And then women can have the option of wearing bottoms. They're saying you have to at least be 18 years old. It says the group said all participants
Wait
must
a minute.
Be at
Why
least
Why do the women get to wear bottoms?
I won't go into that. But it says they must be at least 18 years old. It says all genders, sexualities, and bodies are welcome. Wow. No photos or videos are allowed. And then he does make this little special claim. It says sexual activity is not permitted. Nudism does not equal consent, and harassment will not be taken lightly. Violators will be asked to leave.
Here's the bottom line. Nobody wants to see you naked. Can I just tell you that? That's like the places you go where they advertise there's a nude beach, and then you go there, and the people that actually want to take their clothes off and lay out there are not the ones that should. I'm just saying. spare us, please. Bowling. Nude bowling, for God's sake.
So why?
Thank you, Ethan.
Stop.
I caught your joke.
Thank you for catching that. Spare me, please. That's a bowling.
You're so good.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.